Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Do not go quickly to the temple to make your vow. It's better to go there to learn rather than to offer sacrifices for a vow, as foolish people do, people who cannot decide right from wrong. Think before you speak, and do not make quick vows to God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth, so therefore let your words be few. So, under the law of Moses, if you made a vow, that is, you promised God to do something, then you had to do it. And it was no good saying, I was only trying to serve God on a sort of special level. It didn't work out. I was trying best, and it didn't happen, so it doesn't matter. No, that's not the attitude. We are to be absolutely serious about our relationship with God, and not think that because, I'm willing to do something a bit extra, that therefore we can just treat God like he's not the holy God that he is. The more you worry, it is more likely that you're going to have bad dreams. The more you talk with your tongue, the more likely it is that you will speak something foolish. So when you make a vow to God, keep it as quickly as possible. Do what you promised to do for him. It's better not to vow at all than to make a vow and not keep it. Don't let your own words lead you into sin so that you have to tell God's priest that you didn't mean it. Why should God be angry with you? Why should he destroy your work? No matter how much you dream, how much useless work you do, or how much you talk, you still have to stand before God in judgment. So Solomon does believe in God, and he does accept that God exists and that there will be a judgment. But it seems that in reality, Solomon is very far from this. We just read in chapter 4 and chapter 3 how he's saying it's far better to have never lived than to have to live in this world, even though Solomon had so much wealth and he had all that he could want. And yet he seems to accept God exists without actually having a relationship with him. And this is what we can slip into. We can accept God exists, but not have a relationship with him. And just sort of stumble through life with a bit of philosophy here and a few ideas there, and just grumble and complain about how it all is. And this is what happens when you turn away from a total commitment to God and turn to idols, which is what Solomon did. Do not be surprised, Solomon says, when you see that the ruler oppresses the poor and denies them justice and their rights. Well, that is exactly what he did, because when he dies, the people come to his son Rehoboam, and say, "Your father whipped us. Your father abused us. Could you please not do so?" And now he just sort of says, "Well, yeah, that's what happens. That's what governments do." Well, it's a bit of a long difference between that and how when he started his reign, he gave justice to the poor, to the two women who came to him arguing about whose baby is this, etc., etc. And how people came to him from all over the world to hear all his wisdom and justice. So he's given up on God's wisdom, and this is where it leads him. If you love money, he says, you will never be satisfied. If you long to be rich, you will never get all you want. It is vanity. The richer you are, the more other people demand from you. All you gain is the knowledge that you're rich. Well, he did love money. He says that he gathered silver and gold. He loved it. He had all this wealth. Now he's saying, and what a waste of time it was. Now, for most people in the world, to gather wealth is the most important thing in life. That is so important for them, to get wealth, because they wrongly assume that that is the way to happiness. And this is the value of this record of Solomon, that he had all that. But then he says it is absolutely meaningless. A working man may or may not have enough to eat, but at the very least he can sleep well at night. But a rich man stays awake worrying. That is a great evil that I have seen under the sun. People save up their money for a time when they think they're going to need it, and then they lose it quickly in some foolish business deal, and they have nothing left to give as an inheritance to their children. We came into this world with nothing, and we leave it with nothing. In spite of all our labor, there is nothing to take with us. We go just as we came. We labor, but it is a striving after the wind. We have to live our lives in darkness and grief, in worry, in anger and sickness. So then, it just shows that even if finally you did get all the wealth that Solomon had, this is what you will think about it. And these words are quoted in the New Testament pretty well, where Paul says that we cannot take anything with us out of this world. That all that you work for, you've got to leave behind. And it is only therefore what is done for God and for the Lord Jesus and for his people that is going to have any ultimate meaning. The rest of it is all nonsense. So he goes on, this is what I've found out. The best thing for anyone is to eat, to drink, and be merry in what he's worked for during the short life that God has given him. This is the fate of man. Well, Paul sort of quotes that and says, if there's no hope of resurrection, then we might as well eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow we're going to die. And, of course, what Paul is saying is, well, no, this isn't quite the case. It's quite not the case. Because if we have the hope of resurrection, then these things will change. And there is purpose in life. If God gives a man wealth and property and lets him enjoy them, he should be grateful and enjoy what he's worked for. It is a gift from God. Since God allowed him to be happy, he won't worry too much about how short life is. So then, what he's saying, I think, is that if God gives you wealth, well, so he does. So then you can enjoy it. But all striving and struggling and laboring to get wealth is going to end in all this grief. And that's what happened for him.